So this is part two of a three-part series.
Let me tell you about the time when I got spiritually kicked out of another country. So it's 2023 and we are about to do our first live event. It was going to be at the Joburg Theatre. So the idea, the theme for the event was Into the Ancestral Realm, where we discuss what happens after we die from a spiritual perspective. I'm not exactly sure how I came across this lady, but I found out that there was a lady who lives in a remote village in Zim who deals with people who have been living underwater for some time. My thinking was it would be interesting in the context of what happens behind the veil to discuss the different dimensions that exist beyond the veil. So I thought, cool, I'll interview this lady. And not only that, what I will do is that we will shoot a documentary. So this was going to be a visual. So we will travel to Zim and then we will shoot a short documentary. And then we're going to fly to the documentary. And this was going to be the headlining act. It was going to be like a surprise headlining act for the event. In a series of coincidences, Ugogo Thato then told me that she knew the lady or something like that, that she was going to Zim, go through a particular ceremony that this Gogo was then going to be helping them with. So I'm like, I bet, let's go. I got my people together and I told Gogo Thato that we will meet them there. So we get on the road. We travel from Joburg to Musina. That is about a 4-hour drive. But if you drive like me, it's like 5 hours because I drive very slow. So things got off to a rocky start right from the beginning. So we get to Musina, we headed to Bait Bridge. And as we get to Musina, I realize that I have the wrong passport. I left the passport that I need back in Joburg, which is another 4-5 hour drive. And now we can't do this because the event is 1 week from the time that we're traveling. So we're traveling this weekend and then the event is the following weekend. So we can't waste time traveling up and down. So we got the passport couriered. We paid a stupid amount of money for this random white guy to courier the thing on his motorbike. Within same day delivery, I don't know how he did it. He did it. We got to the border and I nearly get into a physical fight with someone in the border building in Zim. But ultimately, we got on the road. We're in Zim. The Zim road from Bait Bridge, nice, smooth. And then as we're driving, trying to follow the directions, we turn right. And we shouldn't have turned right. The road that we then turn into is a gravel road. At the time when we made the turn, it was midday. We turn onto the road, it's a gravel road, and shortly after that, we lose signal on our phones. There's no network, our GPS stops working. Okay, fine. It's an adventure. Kumnandi, siyaqhuba. It's delicious. At some point, the gravel road is not that bad. It's manageable, but it's still gravel. But now we are inside a forest. There's trees all around us. There's baobab trees, smaller trees, high grass. And we're driving. At some point, the sun sets, and we are still in the middle of the forest, and the road is eerily straight, yet endless. There is nothing else but just forest. Once in a while, you see a hut, but we know that the people here only speak Shona. We don't understand the language. We won't be able to get any kind of direction. So we keep driving, and it gets darker. Have you ever been lost inside a forest in the middle of the night? First of all, it is pitch black. That night, there was no moon. You can't see anything beyond the lights of the car. When you have that level of limited visibility, you start to lose track of your surroundings. You start feeling like you are in this dark void. And that's when the hallucinations start. The trees seem to grow tall, taller as you're looking at them. The shadows start moving strange. You start seeing things. What is that? Am I seeing what I'm seeing? You're not even sure what it is that you're seeing. You get scared to the point where it is funny, and then it stops being funny. And we are driving, and because we don't have GPS, we don't know how far still we have to drive. And now we are running low on petrol, and we don't know where we are. We don't know how far the next garage is. And as you're realizing this, the trees are growing taller into this dark sky. There's a weird silence, even though you are inside a car and you're listening to the car hitting the gravel, but there's a silence. There's a thick, unmoving silence. At some point, I thought I saw a log. Then someone said, no, that's a snake. I'm like, no, that's a log, but that's not a log because it's moving across the road. But it's too big to be a snake. But it can't be a log because it's moving. It is something and it is moving. It could be a log, it could be a snake, it could be something in between, but it is there. And it's there. Eventually, you lose sense of time. Time begins to warp and stretch in ways that you don't understand, because now the road is long and straight, but nothing is changing. It's all monotonous. You feel like time is moving, but you don't feel like you're moving. You feel like you're in the same space, and the road is just not ending. And this is going to be the place where you are going to meet your end. You are not going to make it out of this forest, and no one will ever know what happened to you or where you are. Then you make it out the forest. You possibly overindulging in someone else, pretend I'm happy as someone else, but really I would rather be right back inside of your life. Yeah, back in your life. Eventually we make it out of the forest. You see lights, there's a town, there are people. We make it to the place where we stay. And the following morning, then we make our way to Gwakwa's village, this remote village. As we make our way there, we get lost again. We come across this random white guy. He's like, oh, you're looking for Gogo? Okay. You see that tree over there? Turn right. Go straight. You'll find another junction. Turn right. You are there. We are driving. We are basically at the mercy of the powers that be, because we don't know. But eventually we get there. We find Pukoko Tato and everyone else, and we are introduced to the Koko that we're gonna speak to, the one we're gonna interview. She doesn't speak English, she speaks to a translator, and this guy translates utter total BS. There's some back and forth about money. Eventually we are able to sit down with Koko and interview. She's dressed in her traditional regalia, all her sangoma cloths and everything, neshoba, ikhalizake and everything, the works. We're sitting in her house and I basically ask one question. Just tell us a bit about yourself. Koko speaks for a good 15 minutes, can't understand a word she said. And then the translator guy gives us a 2-3 sentence summary. And I'm like, my guy, you are lying. That is not what she said. I don't understand what you said, but I know that you're lying. We go back and forth about him translating properly. As we're speaking, Ukoko goes into a trance. She throws off all her regalia. She throws down Ishoba. She goes into this intense and violent rant while in trance. I asked the guy, my guy, what's happening? What is she saying? He's like, I don't know what she's saying. I don't understand the language that she's speaking. And I don't think anyone here understands the language. That is spirit speaking, and spirit is pissed off. It is angry. It is fuming, and no one knows why. Eventually, I recorded a bit of that. But then we couldn't. We had to switch off our cameras. Eventually, Koko managed to calm down. She came out of trance. She's a sweet lady with a voice like a song. But when that happened, we realized that nothing was going to happen and we were summarily dismissed. After a 4-day trip, we came back to Joburg with 15 minutes of a recording that we can't do anything with. I felt completely and utterly rejected by the spirit of this land in as blatant way as it can be without it being violent. And now I'm back in the village. Oh, Oshumare lele o shumare lele le mare o shumare. So the village that we're in is extremely remote. The nearest town is almost a 2-hour drive and it's on a gravel road. Oh, it's also in a nature reserve. So that means that there are actual wild animals roaming around. The last time I was here, we had an elephant almost chase us and we saw crocodiles and a massive snake. The village is also inside a forest. So you can't see very far unless you are familiar with the place. You have no idea where the next house actually is. So this is not like those cute villages where you can just take a hike. I call it a village, but I can only see 2 houses and I have no idea where the other houses are. Another thing is that
there's almost no network in this village. There's no cell phone coverage. If you want to get signal, there's a network tree. It's over there. It's like at an intersection of two roads. If you want cell phone network, you have to stand under the tree. The people actually made a bench. They built a bench for you to sit there if you want to talk to your lovey-dovey. One of the most interesting things that happened here in the village is that early in the morning, around 4 or 5, the children in the area wake up and they start sweeping. You know, like how our grandmothers did. Here, it's actually kids who do it. Then the mothers would sort of come up with the finishing touches. So that means that the village and the houses around here are impeccably clean, at least the ones that I can see. Anyway, I'm traveling with a healers community called Heal the Healer. And at a basic level, it is a community that exists for healers to hold space for other healers as they go through certain stages of their spiritual development, especially when that process or when those processes involve ceremonies that have to take place in far off places. It's predominantly a traveling community. But for this particular trip, we are traveling for Gogo Tato, and I will let her explain why we came to this particular village.
I came here for a ceremony as part of my journey. Abongaka gantse o gola mo bongakeng. There's kudilo tse di bulegang tse di bonagatsang in terms of progression in your journey. So I came to Zim this week for that ceremony, and we've been coming here for the last 3 years through Mkulu, who was the first person to then introduce us to Gogo. And we've been coming here since, and coming here for the first time, there was an immediate resonance with just the energy of the space. Tulo ena batubana, there was something I recognized and I remembered, you know, but I couldn't pinpoint what it is. And obviously, every time to travel or whatever, there'll always be connections. That's why I'm sent to travel to all these places. When I lay recognition on a leon, I hold in certain places where no man. This is who I used to be before, or where I was before, or this is a part of me that I forgot, or whatever the case is.
Now, one of the tricky parts about traveling in order to understand how the anti-immigration movement in South Africa affects us spiritually is that once you leave South Africa, you are now the foreigner. You are the one who doesn't belong. You are the odd one. You are the one with the funny accent. You are the one who looks different. Worse still is that in the area we're in, most people only speak Shona, and I don't understand a word of the language. And so this situation forces you to confront your own sense of belonging and your sense of place and your sense of self, really. Ukoko, the one who's hosting us, is extremely averse to media. In fact, she forbids any kind of photography during ceremonies. So I'll call her Ukoko Maita. Of the people who have gathered in Koko Maita's home, there are several nationalities from South Africa, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Botswana, Lesotho, and other places. And I asked some of them how they viewed March in March as people who would have been deemed foreigners in our country. And I had an interesting conversation with some of them, and this is how it went.
Disclaimer here. You will hear throughout most of the conversation there are drums in the background, and that is because for the time that we're here in the village, the drums were very rarely silent. People here, they don't just drum for ceremony, they drum for fun. They don't just sing during ceremony, they sing just for fun. The drum never really kept quiet. People sang through the night even when nothing was happening. So it is part of the experience. When did you arrive here?
On the 26th of June, just 4 days before the 30th.
What were your thoughts before? Like, when you knew that the 30th was coming and you were going to be here?
Yeah, I think nohunal anxiety, you know, because from a human perspective, nohunal anxiety around the fact that I'm going in such a tumultuous time. Togo's are two powers. And it wasn't planned that way. It was planned to be just a perfect trip, whatever, you know, until I realized 2 months before, whenever they decided around the same time. And it was interesting for me, that discovery around how immediately within myself, my body, my sense of self immediately I tensed up from tension and anxiety. And the thing is, it wasn't even from a point of, it was mainly from a point of how I'll be received by Zimbabweans going to Zimbabwe during the time that Zimbabweans and Mozambicans and whoever are being kicked out of South Africa because of the reasons that they're giving. So it was also from a selfish reason. How am I going to be received on the other side? You know, so from a human perspective, from a spiritual perspective, or from a spiritual perspective, for me, it's this whole concept is actually just blasphemous. It feels like high sharp. And I can tell there is spiritual turmoil and tension and conflict, and it's not just a thing that is political or driven by all these other factors that, you know, you can tell, you can sense even in the air, the energy, this is spiritual. There's something, you know, calling it off, man. You know what I mean? So that also then was the thing that was always at the back of my mind.
Do you disagree with the premise of the whole thing, or do you disagree with people must leave?
Yeah. The premise of the whole thing is strange to me because you didn't see at the beginning, especially them marching to the border management authorities' offices to go and protest about the fact that they're taking bribes for people to cross over and letting cars that are stolen cross over. Never say go home affairs, have I go home affairs, be low complainer around the corrupt government officials who also take bribes and marry people off. They're not going to Dragon City or Chinatown to go and look for Chinese people's identity and ability to be able to work and live here. They're not going to Italian restaurants owned by white Italians who run a whole drug cartel or mafia or whatever. They're not even chasing Pakistani people off really then at the time, you know. But they specifically have an issue around, or are specifically, to me at least, targeting African black people only. You know, I wrote about it the other day, a few months ago. But okay, why? why is it that we pick and choose these kind of things when we've got issues? You know, so why are they not addressing the whole thing holistically? For me, then it starts to give a lens. It does feel like only black African people are being targeted around the issues of illegal immigration. And I understand there's many nuances in how you can actually fight for it. And many people are saying we have to start from somewhere. But it's giving a little bit of like, but also you can see when we say you're being xenophobic, we mean it because that's what you're showing us. The lens in which how you are addressing this illegal immigration thing, that's to me look like Afrophobia or xenophobia?
Outside of capitalism and colonial borders, Africans have been doing this to each other for some time.
Mm.
What does that mean to you? The fact that we've been having lots of violent, forced movements.
Mm.
For me, I think we are moving in a particular circle. Maybe research would need to be done over various periods, either centuries or half centuries, to see where were we 100 years ago, you know, in relation to what you are asking.
Mm-hmm.
My suspicions, you know, even without having looked at the matter, my suspicions is people wanting to be brought home.
When you say people, who are you talking about?
Mainly the Zulu ancestors who have been at the forefront of conquering other nations, fighting other nations, wanting to be, their spirits wanting to be brought back home. And they would torment their... what do you call it, offspring or whatever, or descendants, you know, from wherever they are, to go and fetch them from the battlefields, you know, on which they had fallen.
Did based on what you're saying, do you believe that AmaZulu have had that much of an impact on Southern Africa? That
definitely they've had. Mm-hmm. An impact. They've. I wouldn't say, I'll generalize basically for now.
Okay.
They've created so much imbalance. Imbalance in terms of the harmony of various areas, you know, in the country, the middle, old Transvaal, in the middle, Botswana area, Zimbabwe itself, parts of the Eastern Cape, parts of Lesotho as well, you know. So there are people, in fact, Swaziland, Mozambique.
Mm.
Yeah. And in that process of destabilizing these areas, their people died. And those people need to be brought back home. Kapatlale jazz, you know.
So when you're saying these people, you're saying people other than Mazulu?
No, meaning Mazulu.
Themselves.
No.
Okay.
They died in the battlefields. So I'm trying to sort of, trying to move towards, you know, saying that the march and march could be a different form of the descendants following on the footsteps of their ancestors, driving other nations wherever. The fact that it is Zimbabweans, Mozambicans, it's neither here nor there, it is still the war raging on, you know, from where I stand.
So for you, there's a militancy, spiritual militancy to march and march.
Why it's bari kana varinga bari madia ablela, you know, translated, the blood is talking, the blood that was spilled all over Southern Africa, you know, wants to be reconnected somehow.
Okay.
But unfortunately we are not seeing it that way, you know. Now we are reacting to how it presents itself. It presents itself as much and much, you know, but yet it is, you know, something that has been triggered, you know, by spirit, or by those spirits that want to be taken back home.
there's a perspective in terms of March and March that I've, because I've spoken to several people about this, healers, and there are healers who are for it, and the one comment or the one opinion that I heard was that the influx of different people from different places is causing almost a system overload spiritually in the country.
Interesting.
That everyone coming from different places, obviously we are not just coming alone. Everyone is coming with their own lineages and their own spiritual presence. And
system overload.
This is
overload.
Wait. So this is I'm not saying that I agree or disagree. Yes. I want to share this with you. So,
yes.
So the thinking is that there is a system overload that the ancestors of the land are feeling overloaded in having to carry all these different nationalities, in that everyone, when people want to live permanently in a particular place, they want to permanently set their own gods, as it were, within the land. And what is happening now is a reset of saying there needs to be
also, in relation to your earlier question around the fact that we used to conquer each other and migrate back and forth and move around and assimilate each other, it's not like South Africans to deal with this issue of illegal immigration through the march and march and what they decided to do. Because then that means we've naturally moved in and out of each other's spaces. So the journey that I've been telling you about from South Africa to Mozambique to Zimbabwe to get here is testament to the moving in and out. So I'm wondering and asking, it's a reset, the ancestors of the land. Whose land? Because we've been moving in and out. People have been setting up those gods, their ritual spaces and whatever, and then someone else comes or someone else settles years later and so on and so forth. And then they have moved on, and then these ones come and do the same thing.
Are you saying that no one then can lay claim to any piece of land, or there is no such thing as belonging in terms of the land itself?
It's how it's classified or interpreted. What belonging has to be related to who are the Badimu Baba Dulanko at the moment. When there has been history that's thousands and thousands of years old. So a typical example of, we've spoken about this, Kumapungubwe, that the people Kumapungubwe who are saying they're land claimants, and in truth they are, because they got to Mapungubwe in the 1800s or 1700s, migrating from other places and then settling in there. And then, but the kingdom itself was 800 years earlier, right? So they then put claim to the rituals that they need to do, but again, the rituals of their descendants, Kumapungubwe Hill. But those people are not related to them by bloodline, for example, but they connect to the place because of how they migrated there. So, yeah, no. Ke lefatshe la mang? Is it lefatshe la the ancient ones? Who did they find? And so on and so forth.
Okay.
So now the classification is around, for me, the same way that we were talking about the issues around language or expression or being or the Zulufication of Umungoma, as you said. I think the people complaining about the Ngunification of it, I personally don't see it particularly only as a Zulification. But anyway, with that with that, what you're saying around, it's the same thing as me saying, then they need to purify and anchor and settle in the energies to the land of their ancestors. That's why there is a purging.
The same way that
Israel can purge people of their promised land that they were given. You see, is that not the same thing?
Okay, so luckily you brought together a group of people from different nationalities, right? They are Botswana from Botswana, Basotho from Lesotho. So I want to hear from Bomalome. Does the land of what is called Botswana belong to Botswana? As in ancestrally, it is the land of Botswana, and that is where the ancestors of Botswana are anchored.
That is not the case. Our ancestors actually originate from very different places.
When you say our ancestors, you mean Botswana?
Botswana, okay. Botswana, for one, I've got ancestors in South Africa. Some have ancestors in Zimbabwe, some in Zambia, some in Angola, etc., etc. So, yes, we do put claim to the land because we are there right now. We do have Basaro, Bailon, Horikibwana, Basimulutemku. They also put claim to the land as well. And this claim of the land will always go on like that, depending on what age we are at and who has lived in that land and how they have lived on that land. What attachment did they actually have on that land? So we actually relate, and we are actually open to relate to other nations. As we know, we were created. Like I gave an example that, my maternal side of things, my mother originates from Dinokana, and I keep in touch like that. And I find it very difficult. Like I had to come on this trip. I know you all know I was very nervous about it because we all know South Africa has been naughty, right? So my crossing the border was the most painful thing at this point in time because
which I didn't border?
The Ramotswa South Africa border. Okay. Yes. Not the side as yet, but just across to South Africa at first. As I said, we just know that there's a lot of naughtiness going on in South Africa. We knew there was a plan for this march and march, but whether it was planned nicely or not, all we know is that in one way or the other, we are still foreigners. You know, when you come into your country, we use a different passport, we have a different ID, you will be classified as a foreigner, all right? Even if they may have planned it the way that they have, we know in the loose translation in other villages, they start getting violent. Like so many other things that happen, if they've got no water, they make blockages on the roads, on the main roads, and we get to suffer travelers, you know? Yeah, so... Basically, that's how I think that Botswana actually relates to the rest of Africa.
So we're saying that there is no sense or a concept of ancestral land or ancestral belonging in any piece of land. I don't know if anyone wants to add to that.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who wants to...
Hello. So you had to cross two borders.
I did.
What was that experience when you started hearing about March and March and knowing that this trip was coming up? What was your thoughts on it?
I think
you were originally from Lesotho.
Ke Mosotho. Okay. Ke motang wa ramogela maphoto ke mfula ke mokolobeng. I knew I was going to cross two borders, but then the reality of March on March happened and I panicked. because I was wondering, I panicked so much. I panicked because also someone had to go to Joburg and that they couldn't travel because there were risk, safety risks. But I think what Ngoba, the podcast is the Jenny Kwantu, what journeying about, like journeying into being a person in Africa has done to me, it has made me really look into being African. I was telling you that I hate the word African spirituality. I hate it so much. Because it makes every part of our existence just mystifies. You understand? So I panicked, but luckily, thankfully, God willing, ancestors willing, I was able to cross. And
what were you personally traveling for?
Oh, remembrance. Remembrance. I have this thing where sometimes when I do some spiritual or ancestral things, I'm thinking 50 years from now, there's possibly, as I am discovering these gifts or ingulu, because I think gifts also sounds very lazy, ingulu, because we're sick, because the people trying to live through us, it's like on a very DNA and epigenetical level. So yes, closer to our ingulu. 50 years from now, a person is possibly also going to be suffering from ingulu. And I hope they search Google my name and find my Instagram. When I die, please remove my Instagram from private so that they can go see that there was someone also going through this. You understand? I was traveling for remembrance. I was traveling because also family, when it, or tradition or custom, when it goes to the children, it dies.
What does that mean?
One of the things that made me very emotional being here is watching the ways that the spiritual expressions of maybe Munguni have been watered down in Lesotho. I was telling you that when I get home with the people that I'm allowed to walk with, I need to sit down. Tamo is a son, conference, Brussels, what? Sit down.
Berlin, what? Conference.
And say, because we're so damaged. The damage we're also bringing into the vastness and the how big African spirituality or our African expressions of spirit and engaging with spirit, and we're trying to narrow it down. We have what we call mpande culture. Mpande tlame wapare tiger, you know how I was wearing my Zululu. Everyone in my mpande wears that. But what happens when someone's ancestors come and they want green? I know people who were trustering and they were told, we don't wear beads like that. Understand? So I was here for remembrance. And
remembrance as in you wanted to remember something or you were hoping to remember something?
I wanted and I was hoping. There's a hymn I've been singing. I've been praying that saying, I hope God, you allow us, me as a healer, to experience your bigness and how vast you are. You understand? So I was here to remember how big God is. Ukeda, with these people, opened me to the expansiveness, because I didn't know I could gita like that. You understand? Like, who? It's heavy. So that in itself also opened me, not just spiritually, but also biologically. You understand? My chest, my legs, I didn't know my thighs, my God, pardon me, like, really up, down, you understand? Anyway, I digress. I go, what's up,
okay.
All
right.
How so critical?
How? What do you mean? I can roll.
Oh, that's
how are the next question, Ganti?
As Mosotho, why Othwasa Singuni?
I think the painful thing about colonization is that whiteness is so limited. It wants to limit everything it interacts with. So how Mosotho, you only think about you here. And when I trace the bloodlines that I come from, it made me cry. I saw a map. Like I was reading of Revelations and Revolutions. I saw the map. Monaliba Urudze, Tonga, Zimbabwe. And in Lesotho, the conversation is always like, Tselewe Thokoza Gogo, Thokoza Gogo. And it made me cry because I think these callings that we are living through are historical facts or historical remembrance. So seeing that, and the proximity of Bahurutse limba Tonga libo mang, and there was cross-pollination, and now people are gaslighting me. So in Thwasa umnguni, because singabantu, we are so, I like the idea of bigness. We're so big. So big. And hangata haribuaka badimu, I always say to people that I work with, when we speak about ancestors, we always think about the people that we know that are immediate. And sometimes even the idea of where does my gift come from, sometimes the gift doesn't even come from people. It comes from the stars. Comes from a rock. Or from a valley, or from a river. Not that I'm holuka bangkhunwa mama. Water was so alive, and it transferred its aliveness. How fisha ore botse these questions that you're asking? Because also water asks us questions, you understand? Maybe your gift of asking questions doesn't come from your paternal or maternal. It was just earth in its bigness or vastness. Do you understand? So you trust amunguni because ngilanga lakwa Dlamini nkosi wena we khunene
ancestrally
get close, but also ancestrally.
Okay.
Also this idea of ancestral is also very diambora, because we're trying to demystify or trying to simplify something that's so beautiful and poignant, so that it can fit people's understandings. You understand? So habo mewaka gaika hunale maswat. You understand? Dingu noma pondo msefut. And I come from people who are ukam. I hope I pronounced it properly. Umadolo, umakwesibe, amagwati, and they all conversed and called me noma pondo mse.
So in your perspective, in your view, your understanding of ancestral lineages, you are, most people are Nguni anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that what you
I think reflecting back to much on much is there's a culture of dominance. The one thing that I'm saying is that Yaza Mazulu, Lendo, that they were, the legacy that was left with is these people have so much war and blood within them. You understand? Not everyone is Manguni, you understand? But because the coding of this particular spirit, the genes, it's maybe coded God dominance, that people coded with flowing nicely. You saw those people transing Gadi Fairy, that people coded Gadi Fairy, you understand? But Bonaba, you understand? So there's also still, as Gugutato said, there's still also spiritual dominance and a cultural dominance that is still, because maybe one thing that I was thinking when you were talking about dominance is maybe one thing we also need to do in closing as healers is to realize that when these spirits are reincarnating through us, is we need to teach them to do good. Because maybe there's blood on their hands.
Tell me again, what did you say?
When these spirits are reincarnating, because of
to teach them to do good.
Yeah, man, I think.
Do you want to introduce yourself or do you want to be anonymous?
Ngazichaza khona. Igama nguMzwanele Tshishonga. Yeah. Mandithi, I suppose we are here sikhaphe ugogo. As umntu onomcimbi awuphethisiweyo. And almost because we breathe together, wanting to show up for one another in a way that doesn't make her feel isolated. Because now we are pa for such kind of work, you know, you already imagine the kind of energy she'll be surrounded by. Mm-hmm. So it was really to hold space. Mm-hmm. I do think though, Zim has lived in my mind for a long time. And I was particularly very excited to come. Because within my clan names and Mumunyai, Mugalanga, and I'd always found it fascinating that I was in South Africa. And I had a clan name that had an entire nation in Zimbabwe, you know, like Bane language Jabo and everything. And somehow that has kind of morphed over time into me being Umvenda, who then only references this as a site at some point, a clan name, Munyai Mugalak, in the sense of Uzututa.
Okay. When you say it led you to be Umvenda, what do you mean?
No, I mean, it I'm Umvenda.
Okay.
So even at the time that I'm born, these are two different republics. Okay. The Republic of Venda stood as its own thing.
Yeah.
So already in the fear when nyaga nzalo South Africa, so it seems. But within 2 years, that is resolved all of a sudden, apparently. South Africa and Kumnandi. But there is like this tension between it's up, you know. But without going too far, for me, then it was to find a resolution with this thing that I've wondered, you know, to say if Ababandu that I cite myself to come from exist in this land, what would it feel like to just walk in? You know, how much of myself would I be able to encounter just by being in the space? Number one. Number two, I think it was also the fact that there's a little museum in Joburg called the Origin Center. Mm. And I happen to have a ceramic exhibition in the space. And part of this exhibition was pulling out from their own archives pots that come from the regions of Limpopo, Zimbabwe. Mm. Because these things were being collected by, I guess, colonial anthropologists, a lot of the documentation is missing. So it's really hard to tell between the two. Mm. And the styles of the pottery are also so similar, you know. And for me, it was to then also do that citing within my practice, to say, perhaps what does it mean to bring out imimoya yabo babesenza lomsebenzi long before, who also lived Glendale, nale kuthiwa utata mosuka kuyo, you know. So the latter part of my interest was really to understand how I locate myself within the work that I do, ngomhlaba nangodaka, particularly in a space that takes this so seriously, because I feel like they still really do think about ngomhlaba nodaka in a very complex way, and that is why they love.
Okay. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, or? My name is Thobile Mavuso. Marco.
Okay. So, what brought you here on this particular day?
On this particular day, I'm here because I received a very special invitation from Mugogo Tato, where she said, I needed to be here. She is going on a journey, but she thinks somehow I have to step on these grounds. and Gogo and I don't know each other quite densely, but I felt particularly seen, not just myself, but also those I walk with, for her to acknowledge us and invite us to be on this journey with her. And another reason is because I do love traveling and I love seeing different places, having different experiences. And I particularly resonate with Gogo Dibo's remarks on remembrance, because I wanted to remember things that I actually did not know what they were. But part of those things, I believe, is my Ndebele lineage. I am part of Ndunza Ndebele, which is the southern Ndebele within South Africa. But the Manala, who are the northern Ndebele, are the ones that fled here during the time of Umzilikazi to Zimbabwe. So I was interested in seeing if there was any link, any connection, any sign, any particular thing for me to see here. I particularly work with Mugwalo, which is a visual language that's native to Ndzunza Ndebele women. And I was interested in seeing if the Manala Ndebele women have any kind of languaging of their identity, of who they are, any connections to the Ndzunza. And so that is one of the things I wanted to see.
I'm going to ask this to everyone who's willing to talk. Eh?
Can we ask you?
Yes.
And she makes her escape.
Can we ask you?
Yes, you. Okay, what do you want to ask?
Welcome to my podcast. Vus, why are you here? I think, Vus, you betrayed yourself.
Okay.
Because of how this place traumatized you before.
Okay.
And we're always talking about boundaries and healing.
Yes.
But you undid that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking for Kukutatu, your personal reasons.
Yes. Are you answering my question for me?
But it's very interesting. You're leading somewhere, I think.
Okay, go on.
Leading question,
okay,
perhaps.
Yeah,
So... why are you here? Despite Uvusu Ute at the border, he was literally quivering. As we are having, we are taking pictures. Can't you want to tumela chumi? So why? Because yo guys, I need to keep quiet. I think you do such a beautiful work of taking any like the focus away from you, and I think this is why maybe he wears black, because he doesn't want to be seen or perceived. And you camouflage.
Okay.
Can I answer?
Yes, please.
Okay. Why did I come back?
Yes.
This place doesn't want me, but I'm like, this place doesn't want me, but I'm guided to this topic, and this topic needs to happen. And because I have this weird relationship with this work of the podcast, it's like I can be possessed by a topic that won't let me go, and then it has to happen. So I'm here because a topic dragged me here, because I need to understand. I'm deeply troubled by what the possible consequences of March and March are going to be for the coming generation. My biggest fear for March and March was that someone is going to spill blood, and then the movement becomes a ritual. And then down the line, there's going to be people batwasa sona because someone died. And someone needs to cleanse, and someone needs to do this, and someone needs to do that.
What we were saying earlier on, just on the point, the bloodline rituals and so on. I was saying to Vos earlier on.
What?
Sometimes I think social nga nemzilika zile zwangendawo. both who were like Shaka's generals, ne? Trusted, Zwide's generals, trusted, and what one? And then with the assimilation of all these nations under Zulu through Uzgidi, and then these three in particular leaving KwaZulu to go and form their own nations with generals that fought in wars against other nations. So Shangani started the Gaza Kingdom. Mzilikazi then is what Gogo was saying, that she can then sense the connection or knows or connects to Mbandebele Bamu through Mzilikazi, you know. Mzilikazi then create a nation, yeah, Mandebele. Zwayendaba then travels, gets to Tanzania, and then the Ngoni nation within that little triangle, yeah, Tanzania, Malawi, Zambia gets born from the descendants of Zwayendaba. And it's very interesting for me, these three, there's a story there, like there's these three that essentially betrayed part of this commitment and this brotherhood and this thing that they had as a consequence of being assimilated into Amabutho Ashaka. For me, this thing has been feeling like this spiritually. It's been feeling like gore badimo ba pile pile maZulu must just accept defeat, basically. Okay. Because I think there's a thing that I'm sensing around the spirits Tsabatoba that feel like I cannot accept. It's like a dished lava. I cannot accept that these people betrayed me. So it's interesting now that they are chasing away the descendants of Soshanga and Mzilikazi, Lizwangendaba, and whoever else left the Zulu nations or those Nguni nations that were assimilated into the Zulu kingdom to go and pave the way and create their own nations and so on. They are chasing them, those descendants. So I don't think there's any way that we can think that this is not spiritual.
As you can imagine, this was a long and complicated discussion, and I will share more of it in the next episode. I will share more of our individual spiritual experiences that we had while we were in the village. But for now, I want to leave you with something. I want to share with you a moment that we had on the first night. We were all sitting with some people from the village, and Ugogo Maida in Ndumbeni. There was quite a lot of us. And it was a moment where people from different countries were teaching each other different cultural and spiritual songs. It's a moment that, for me, captured something that is in many ways beyond words in relation to what it is that we are facing as a people, as a continent, and as spirit beings.
Let me sing it. Owe haila le bo me haila when I met Simola. Oh, haila le na ke twasi tenwa meti koko dela.
Oh, haila.
Owe ke twasi tenwa meti koko dela.
Oh, haila.
Owe
haila le bo haila. Oh, haila, haila le mo haila. Oh, haila. Oh, haila. Oh, haila.
Okay, I thought you would have been a...